Yes, if we think three stages of organizations, the last two have the same complexity. The first one is very different. The first one is when you're still looking for product market fit. That's usually around 35K per month in stuff that gets pulled from you. If you are getting 35K per month pulled from you, now you have found product market fit. Now there is a structural complete change to phase two. You have product market fit and you're starting to scale. You're not growing anymore, you're starting to scale. And then there is another big shift when you are scaling across the globe. But actually, from scaling to scaling across the globe, the challenge is the same. The challenge is, how can we keep it simple? That's why we have this super simple model. Marketing, sales, operations, positioning, mindset. Those are the five things we have to get right. If we get that right, we are on track.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, I'm looking forward to this discussion that we're going to have today because we have Simon Severino on the show today. Simon, welcome.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody.
So what we've had some previous conversations and I've reviewed some of Simon's content and material. And really what we're talking about is go-to-market strategies today and the way that organizations can get unstuck and also identify their bottleneck. But before we get into that, Simon, if you could just share a little bit about your background to the B2B DM game, I think that would be awesome.
Yes, Simon Severino. 21 years ago, I did fall in love with the problem of how to enter a market, how to crush it in the market, how to stay in the market, stay competitive. I was in a big consultancy and I was a junior consultant. And then I worked my way up to the ranks over the next years. And then I went on my own and started my own thing. And of all the topics that we were confronted with, like strategic analysis, competitive analysis, culture transformation, organizational development, and market penetration, entering a specific market, expanding in a specific market, the market topics, they got me emotionally and intellectually. Everything else was just intellectually stimulating to me, but go to market is emotional. And whenever I was talking go to market, if it was the executive team or BMW or whoever, and I would say, guys, we are not moving forward. We don't have a plan that's a better go to market plan than Audi. I need 4 days more with you. They would say, no problem, Simon. Let's expand four more days. 480 of our people are staying here longer. And I was like, why it is so easy to get resources, to get time, to get their time of those busy people. And then I realized, because if they don't have a go-to-market plan, all the other decisions will be guesswork, and then they don't want a guesswork. And so I said to my colleagues, this is the best topic for me. I love this. Can I do this the next 50 years? And fast forward 21 years later, I'm still doing this every day.
Okay. So, I mean, as you were explaining that and talking about that, I mean, first of all, I want to ask you, what do you mean by go-to-market strategy and go-to-market is emotional?
Absolutely emotional. You know, in that example, when the executive team of BMW asked us to create a go-to-market strategy, the question was, how can we be 10 meters ahead of Audi? That is the question. It was one question for a year. We solve that question, we have a go-to-market strategy. After the go-to-market strategy, which means how do we enter the market, expand in the market, stay in the market, then comes the product question. What is the sticky product that sets apart? And that became the i3 and i8, those born electric cars that at that time were super, super innovative. That's 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And so go to market means, what's our plan of attack? What do we stand for? How will we enter a specific region? And then with which products or product mix are we milking the region, staying in the region, and staying in a defendable position in that region? That whole thing is go to market, from the planning to the execution to the client loves it.
So, okay. So what I hear you saying is that what you're doing is you're taking the emotion and you're channeling it and you're focusing it and you're converting it into something that can be quite analytical. Is that correct?
Oh, the emotion is in the room. If you ask, guys, how important is it that you stay competitive against audit? They will say, oh my God, that's the most important thing because they can take market shares from us. So it's vital. It's not just a number on a spreadsheet. It's vital. That's the emotion. So in the room, it's so important that everybody is fully committed. Nobody's checking their phones, their emails during that workshop.
Okay. So, you're the author of Strategy Sprints, 12 ways to accelerate growth for an agile business. So again, going back to, and maybe I didn't phrase it in the way that I needed to, is that you were taking all of that emotion and we're putting it into ways, you know, to help us to leverage that emotion and being able to execute. Because if you look at, you know, strategies, transformations, the go-to-market, you know, there's a whole lot of ideas that can be created, but the execution piece is really where everything falls short. They say, you know, 99% of execution activities fail, you know, because of, you know, not having the structure and the frameworks and channeling the emotion to be able to push past an execution. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. You know, in the military, they say, you know, beginners, they talk strategy, but the pros, they talk logistics. Logistics is when the rubber hits the road, when you go and execute on that strategic plan, right?
Okay. So you talk about an organization being able to find the bottlenecks associated with all this in 8 minutes. How do they do that?
There are so many moving parts. And one thing that we have learned from the lean methodologies that came from the lean principles of manufacturing, and then they became a management science and a management practice where you identify the waste. So of all the activities that your department, let's say you're the sales department, if you run a bottleneck analysis, you will find that 20% of your activities actually produce sales results. And 80% are just supporting activities, maybe admin, maybe in documenting the sales calls, maybe preparing the meeting room. So actually only 20% is creating 80% of the output. And the way to find those 20% is the bottleneck analysis. So you can take each value creation process, and if it's a value chain from beginning to end, there is one part of the chain that's weaker than the others. Now you can prove everything a little bit, or you can just focus on that weakest part of the chain. Think of a traffic jam. You have 5 lanes of a highway, and then there is one where everything, where the jam is, all the traffic is stuck there. Now, if you improve 5 lanes, it doesn't improve anything because the bottleneck is in one lane. But if you just improve by 20%, the amount of cars that can go through that one lane, that will have much more impact on the overall throughput. That's the technical term, but basically on the outcomes, on the results. So we have put together such a bottleneck analysis for busy executives. They don't have time to run long analysis. So we'd say, okay, in 8 minutes, you go through this list of questions and you will know what your current bottleneck is. Because what we want them to do is to focus each week on just solving one bottleneck. And when that is solved, then you start the next project, and the next project is solving the next bottleneck.
Okay, so if I'm starting to think about that, not having it sitting here right in front of me, I start going back to the old Pareto principle of 80-20. Do you find that, you know, there's a common bottleneck amongst the majority of organizations? So, you know, this is the kind of like the number one where most people are getting stuck. Can you say that with the data that you've collected?
It's always different. We're collecting data every week, but each week. So even if you are, let's say you are the sales team of a pharma, mid-sized pharma company. Right now this week, you have a bottleneck. Maybe it is the number of people that you can call this week because of the time zones. Now, if we solve it this week, next week, you will have the next bottleneck. So we called more people. Now we have more appointments scheduled. We don't have enough rooms to book. So next week, we will have the room bottleneck. Now we solve the room bottleneck by outsourcing or flying to them instead of they coming to us. We solved that bottleneck. In the week after, we will have the invoicing bottleneck. We cannot send so many payment invitations at once for technical reasons or for compliance reasons. So we will have the technical bottleneck, then the compliance bottleneck, then the delivery bottleneck, then the referral bottleneck. So each team has one current bottleneck, which is the weakest link. And as soon as you solve it, there will be the next one. So it's an ongoing dynamic process of in this week, that's why we do it on Monday. This week, what's the bottleneck? What should we as a team focus on so that we actually solve it by Friday? And next Monday, we will attack the next bottleneck.
So then how does an organization prevent itself from having the fire hose drill all the time? It's like, oh my gosh, what is it this week, right? You know, because I get it from a theoretical perspective. Like, hey, we've got this, we're going to, you know, be agile, we're going to focus, and we're going to be able to do this. But, you know, how do you keep the burnout from happening?
Well, that's exactly the opposite of burnout. Burnout is, burnout is what's happening right now in most teams of most people listening right now. They have 17 people doing 48 tasks, and nobody really knows when the task is done. So, for example, marketing is working on the website. And now ask them, hey, marketing, it's Friday, 4 p.m. Are you done with the website? And they will go, oh, what do you mean by done? I don't have a definition of done. So, and that's the problem, right? 48 activities, nothing is completed. And that's why those teams, they actually burn out, because they have 47 projects. Half of them is a program, not really a project, because there is no deadline, there is no definition of done, and they can never check it off. That's why they feel that they are working so much. They are not really producing much or solving much, but they are always feeling busy and looking busy. And that is what burns you out. Now, contrast that with the Strategy Sprints method, that same team would break it down website to just, okay, quick bottleneck analysis of all the website. What's the one thing that we need to improve? Oh, it's the copy on that landing page. Okay, this week, A, B, C tests. Write 3 types of copy, test them 8 times internally, then 20 times externally with the email list. On Friday, we pick the winner. You see the difference? That marketing team just did one landing page, and not even everything, just the copy. But that is now closed. We have the winner. We check it off. Next week, we might work on the button, so on the technical part of that landing page. What about the contrast of the button, the colors? Does it really animate to click? What's the conversion rate? 4%? Should be 6%. How can we move to 2%? Let's run 3 experiments in 3 days. But the whole marketing team will just solve that one bottleneck. And that's the opposite of burnout, because first, they're doing just one thing that creates flow. And flow is when you forget about the time because you are so in the thing. And second, you can check it off in the same week. So you get a positive feedback and you get proud. And you can applaud that team and say, whoa, you have solved the copy problem. Finally, we have a good copy, a copy that works. And they go, oh, yeah. Oh, I'm feeling results. I'm getting applause. The last time was 6 months ago because I never have a finished product. I'm continuously doing something, but I never get the feeling I shipped it. It was good. People said it's working.
So it seems like what you're saying is that this is also an organizational transformation process and activity.
Yes, it leads to transformation every time.
So, but that's not what they're talking about. That's not the emotion in the room when you start talking about transformation, because people are like, oh my gosh, what? Then they start personalizing that individually, right? So I would have to say that there are certain things that you don't say to make sure that organizations are being able to ultimately have the transformation. What are some things that you avoid?
They usually bring us in to improve sales. So we start with, okay, what's the plan? Who are you here to serve? Who are you not here to serve? And that's usually, nobody asked me that. But it's a very good exercise. Who are you not here to serve? Who should not be your clients? Who will you not pick as a client? Then we do that exercise. Then we say, okay, what is the strategic value? So what's coming up for them? What's frustrating them? What do they need help with? And how will you help them be ready for what's coming? That in itself changes the sales conversation usually, because before we come, most of them are trained in talking features and benefits. This is how we do it. This is what we can do. This is who we are. And we completely shift that to a more conversational approach around listening to what the other side actually needs right now. And then having a natural conversation around that and helping them decide what's best for them. So in this part alone, the first month, in this part alone, you can probably hear between the lines, there is a ton of shifts going on. A shift in more listening and less transactional pushing stuff on them. So the definition of sales changes. Then the next shift is they become much more collaborative, because you cannot finish that landing page just with your department alone. You will need the inputs also. If you are marketing, you need the input of sales and you need the input of operations. So in the weekly meeting, they will come together. That's the next shift. They're usually used to just do their thing. And now it's collaborative. No, there is no my thing and your thing. There is a landing page. And to do a good landing page, we have to make the team win. So we have at least to talk during the week and to share prototypes and to give feedback each other on those prototypes so that we can be ready on Friday. So there are multiple shifts that happen during those 90 days. And the first ones are around sales, but then the next one are really around more transparent working. We call it working in public, showing what I am building before it's ready so that others can give me feedback. And so it becomes a much more iterative culture of working more openly, more in public, and having less walls between departments.
So the other thing, as I'm hearing, is a theme that's going through this, is that you're enabling an organization to become more customer centric, because I mean, what, even when you started explaining the thing about, hey, it's features and benefits, hey, it's my stuff and your stuff. I mean, what we're now saying is like, oh, we need to shift our focus and lens, all of us as a collective, and really focus in on being more customer centric. And to me, I'm also hearing that it's both internal as well as external.
Yes. So my metaphor is, if I ask the marketing team, what's your job? They will say a landing page, a brochure. And then I would say, no, your job is to make the team win. Then we go to the sales team. What's your job? Calling people, getting deals signed. No, your job is to make the team win. Then we go to operations. What's your job? Does the customer is satisfied and repairing bugs? No, it's making the team win. And when does the team win as a whole? When the customer is successful. So it's this whole interplay. I see it like a sports team. they win together. And if defense just optimizes defense, they're not going to win. They're just going to get less scores. And if offense just optimizes offense, they're not going to win. They're just going to score more, but they're going to receive also more. So they have to think the whole thing. And my job, your job, everybody's job is to make the team win. And we win when the customer says, yes, you have solved my problems. Please, can we do more together?
Okay. Now, you gave the BMW example, and you also gave example of some other, you know, globally recognized brands. But I'm sitting here, and I'm not part of that, right? I'm a smaller organization. Maybe I'm going from small to wanting to be mid-size. Maybe, you know, I'm stuck in being mid-size. Revenue numbers, you know, could be anywhere from, say, I'm 3 million. I want to be 30. I want to be 300. You know, so is this and does this work for organizations of various sizes, all sizes, only different, you know, certain particular industries? I mean, how does it actually, you know, get applied in all these different organizations?
Yes, if we think three stages of organizations, the last two have the same complexity. The first one is very different. The first one is when you're still looking for product market fit. That's usually around 35K per month in stuff that gets pulled from you. If you are getting 35K per month pulled from you, now you have found product market fit. Now there is a structural complete change to phase two. You have product market fit and you're starting to scale. You're not growing anymore. You're starting to scale. And then there is another big shift when you are scaling across the globe. But actually, from scaling to scaling across the globe, the challenge is the same. The challenge is, how can we keep it simple? That's why we have this super simple model. Marketing, sales, operations, positioning, mindset. Those are the five things we have to get right. If we get that right, we are on track. And if we have an operating system with a weekly habit, a daily habit, weekly habit, and a monthly habit to have the few controllables under control. Now, with that thing, you can run a mid-sized business and you can scale it to a global enterprise. It's the same thing. You have to solve these five things. The only problem is the speed of growth. You will have to find your appropriate speed. You might be too slow. Then your competitors eat your lunch and you run out of cash flow. You might also be too fast in growing. This is what happens sometimes in tech and in software. They grow so fast that they cannot hire. Culture becomes fuzzy because it's hard to keep it simple and keep it aligned when you're growing so fast. So you have to get your rate of change right, the speed that is appropriate to your growth. And the other question is really, can you keep it simple? Because the first thing that break are the processes and the culture. And if you allow the processes to break, you can repair them in a month. But if you allow the culture to break, so this is how we do things here. We do not accept this kind of decisions and this kind of behavior. If you allow that to break, you have a lag of over a year. If you want to get culture back on track, that can become a huge problem.
So a lot of people that I chat with are in a particular stage where, you know, it's, you know, early stage. They're now starting to go into the growth area. And if you think about founder-led organizations, a lot of times when they pick up their initial customers, they're people that are already in their network. And then they, you know, are having to delegate responsibility to, you know, handle the growth of the organization to other people. And they think it's just so darn simple. So, you know, how do you actually get past that hump? Is that part of the culture piece or is it getting into the process piece?
Oh, that's already the shift from you have found product market fit, because in product market fit, everybody's doing everything. The founder is doing everything. Now, as soon as you have product market fit, that's 35K per month, you have to fire the founder from operations. Founder becomes now CEO. And that's a very specific role. You are not allowed to do operations anymore. You are not allowed to do marketing anymore. And you will get maybe a specific time still to do sales. But very soon, we will ask you to become the leader of the sales team, to start hiring and scaling the sales process. So the first thing is you have to fire yourself from operations. So I was there. I remember how it felt. Oh my God, I am the consultant. How can I fire myself? What is there left, right? They come because of me. And it's true, but it's only partly true because they come for their own problem to solve. And if you have a process that solves that problem, they will not miss you at all. Think of your triathlon trainer. You are in the UK, you have a triathlon trainer and you're training with them. Now you move to Texas. Do you have to stop training for triathlon? No, you will find a triathlon trainer in Texas. Why? Because they have a process that helps you get there. It's the training plan, the nutrition plan, and it's that accountability piece. Those are the three things, and it's a process. So it's not the person, you will miss the person, but you can still train because it's about the process. And the same thing, if you are a financial advisor and you think that you have to build a portfolio, no, you don't. You have to create a process and make sure that quality control mechanisms are in place. So your job now is to create those quality control mechanisms and to be out of the delivery of the client work as soon as you hit those 35K per month. And now you have to work on form, fit, and function of the sales systems, the marketing systems, the operations. So how you onboard people, how you invoice, how you react if they don't pay. Now you create the systems. And as a CEO, you only have a couple tasks. One is vision, culture, hiring and firing, performance management, and growth. And growth is working on form, fit, and function of your sales systems, of your marketing systems, and of partnerships, strategic alliances, IP lending, old patents, that kind of stuff. It's a very specific thing that we ask from founders is that they fire themselves and they now work on the business, not in the business anymore.
Okay, so when you start talking about some of the skill sets and some of the competencies associated with those, let's just say new activities for once I hit up into that 35K, I would have to guess that, you know, not, you know, all of those particular areas are strong skills, you know, for some of those people. I mean, so can they fire themselves from some of those components and put somebody in place who's much better at that? And then I oversee them. Is it otherwise, you know, I'm always trying to say that, hey, these are the things that you must have in order to be a successful CEO.
Yes. So we have a daily habit, a weekly habit, and a monthly habit. The daily habit is, we all write down, how did I allocate my time today? And of those activities that I did today, which one will I delegate tomorrow? And everybody does that every day in the 90 days program. I'm doing this since 21 years. I still find things to delegate. Last week, I've delegated the hiring interviews. I wrote it down and I was like, 20 hours of interviewing people every week? Really? Do I need to do this? And then my team said, no, Simon, I can do it. And I go, oh my God, I just want 20 hours per week. Of course, I need to write down, this is the hiring process. This happens in the first 15 minutes call, then they send the video, then there is a 30 minutes demo, then you pick the top 10, then you interview the top three, and there is the folder where you find onboarding week minus one, week zero, week one, etc. So of course, you have to build that system first. But then as soon as you build it, you hand it over. And that's why daily habit, write down how you are allocating your time. And this is where you find what to delegate next. And you can delegate to a software or to a freelancer or to a person. And you can cut. So there are four options. Then the weekly habit, the one marketing number, one sales number, one ops number of that week. So of all the activities that we're doing, which ones are really working? Let's do more of that. Which ones are not working? Let's stop doing that.
Okay, so let's go back to the go-to-market strategy component and the go-to-marketing changes. You talked about, you know, at the very beginning of your years of experience. You know, 20 plus years ago, it was a very, very different world that we lived in. The acceleration of change and velocity and complexity and ambiguity and uncertainty is just increasing at an ever-increasing rate. So if I think about where things are headed and what organizations need to be focusing in on so that they don't get outdated, things that I used to hear or get advice or insight on, 5 years ago doesn't apply today anymore. Matter of fact, a lot of times it'll even hurt you. You know, where do they need to focus today in order to make sure they are the ones that aren't vanilla, that are standing out and being able to capture market share?
The world has completely changed. Life today looks so much different. My day 20 years ago, flying to a city, having an 8 hours workshop with the executive team, building the go-to-market strategy, then flying back to my city, 3 hours of documenting on a PowerPoint and then sending them the PowerPoint results. My life today, 2 hours of yoga and running, then 3 hours of thinking, then reading, then having one Zoom call. And then that's the morning. And while I do this, 274 helpers, it's like Jarvis to the Ironmans, are out there and helping the teams taking real-time decisions. They're populating the real-time dashboards with them. There are 274 modules, videos, templates, Google Docs, spreadsheets that help them not have to think about all these things, just do their work and do it smoother, do it faster, do it better. So there is a full set of real-time support, and nobody has to fly anywhere. It works on their phone, on their iPad, on their computer. So we don't fly anymore. We don't waste time in commute. Remember, those people had to fly in from all countries, and now it's on their phone, wherever they are. So they're playing with their kids, and then they build the prototype, and then they walk the dog. They come back from walking the dog. They get feedback from their sprint coach about that prototype. Now they ship it to their email list. Then they go cooking, because that's life today, right? You are at home, and it's very different. And now you can check your email stats, and you will see, oh, the open rate is 3%, but that specific email, that got 9%. So you upload it on your phone and you go, oh, I found a winner. It has 3% more conversion than the other. Now it's the same day, right? We are talking about 8-9 days from you got the prompt, you did the first draft, you got feedback from your sprint coach on your phone, you tested it, and you find the winner. It's 9 hours. So it's pretty efficient, but you still had a life. You were walking the dog, you were cooking. It was a very healthy, holistic day. You had time to read a book in between, to think. One thing that management doesn't have time for is thinking. You need to think, you need to build a prototype, and then to ship it. And while the market is giving you the feedback, you can read a bit, you can think a bit. That's also part of working. And so, yes, it has changed dramatically. And the way we coach is not eight hours workshops in a hotel anymore and having to fly across the world. It's real time, it's on your phone. You are Iron Man, we are your Jarvis. We are in real time with you. You have, on some days, you have 12 questions and you want immediate feedback. And the next day you have just 2 questions.
So when I think about one of the bottlenecks we always have discussions about is in the areas of creative thinking and innovation. I mean, from a society perspective, even though we may say, hey, there's a lot more new solutions and products and things like that that are available, and there's a whole lot of innovation going on, when you start looking at the actual macro numbers associated with creative thinking and innovation, it's actually on the decline. And part of it is kind of what you alluded to a little bit. You know, we're stuck in 10 meetings a day. I have Zoom fatigue. You know, it's always task, 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 task. And I'm not, you know, going through a creative thinking and innovation type of process. So when I start thinking about that element, you know, of being agile and sprinting and being more customer centric and all of that, how important does that role play?
Very important. And the quality of our questions is so important. That's why when I certify the Certified Strategy Sprints coaches, my main focus is to help them create a set of very, very deep questions. Questions around bottleneck, questions around what is right now really important to do. Instead of quickly solving and moving on to the next task, really thinking on Monday, what is the one bottleneck that we want to solve this week? And how are we going to attack this problem? And how will we see that it is solved? So you see, it's much simpler, but it's also much deeper and requires a second level thinking. It's not just a shortcut or something that ChatGPT can do for you. It's really deep thinking, level two thinking, slow thinking for half an hour, an hour. And then you speed up because now you have the direction, and velocity is always speed, including the direction. So without direction, you might run in the wrong direction. So that's why you slow down to understand the problem and to set the direction for the prototypes. And then you speed up the building the prototypes, testing the prototypes. But the first part is actually slowing down in order to think.
Okay. So if I think about strategy sprints and where you started 20 years ago and how all of this has evolved, you know, what do you see as the next area or the next opportunity where it now needs to be becoming part of essentially the system?
I am very excited. Right now, many countries are telling us that they are in a recession. So I'm very excited that right now we are refining all the 274 tools to have more cash flow support parts. So of all the tools, what does it mean with less budget? How can we make it more resilient? How can we make it leaner? So those are what most countries tell us right now. They have either slow growth or even negative growth. They see it in the pipeline. They see it in the suppliers. They see it in the prices of raw materials. And so they are very worried about costs and about cash flows and about the pipeline. So what I am now very passionately working on, since I am not in operations, I have time to listen to these things, to think about these things, and to build helpful tools that then I hand over to the coaches, I put on the website, and then people can take them open source, and it can help many navigate those current situations. So this is what I'm doing right now. Next year, I will listen, I will hear other topics, and I will be of service to those topics.
So you're talking about being customer-centric yourself as well.
Totally.
Absolutely. Okay, so needless to say, you know, COVID was something that, you know, caught almost everybody off guard. There was one organization that was an event management company that actually had an insurance policy about, you know, pandemic and catastrophic, you know, events. And so therefore it didn't cause that organization to go under because they essentially had the wherewithal, you know, to plan for that type of possibility. And then therefore it actually saved their company. That's a rarity. However, I think on top of mind for a lot of organizations is what happens and how can we survive and maybe even thrive through the next crisis? Because the next crisis isn't an if, it's a when. How are organizations and how are you helping them? Or are you even hearing them saying, how can we survive and thrive in the next crisis?
So 20 years ago, I would have said, we need three scenarios, right? A bull case, a base case, and a bear case. And we adapt our strategy to be one that can cope with all of the three. And then we quickly shift towards leaning more into one of those three as soon as we have clarity which one is it. But we can shift. Today, I will say something different. I will say, let's accept that 95% is not in our control. So the definition of black swan is you don't know when it hits you and you don't even know if it hits you. So it's an unknown unknown. You cannot plan for that. What you can plan is what is actually in your control. What are the 5% that are in our control all the time, whatever happens? To me, it's the daily habit, weekly habit, monthly habit. Daily habit, how did I allocate my time today? So let's say we have a hard landing. Gold hits through the roof, Bitcoin through the roof, and everything else is down and you cannot even afford groceries. We live in a medieval thing and we have soon societal conflicts, right? One of these scenarios that's out there. And I'm radicalizing this scenario so that we can prove that those three things are always in our control, even in that scenario. So even in that scenario, it's in my control. How do I allocate my time today? Will I look for silver coins? Will I work on adapting the offer to what's happening? So what do I do? 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., that's still in my control. How I allocate my time to which task? And what will I delegate tomorrow?
And so even when you're explaining that, I'm thinking, well, those are stress management tactics. You don't look at the whole big picture because that'll make you swirl like you're talking about, at velocity with no direction. And it's like, okay, you know, control what you can control.
Absolutely. Yes, those are eternal principles that they work for athletes. They work for management since thousands of years. And then the Egyptians had probably similar principles. And then the weekly habit, the one marketing number, one sales number, one ops number. You see, again, you are focusing on the next curve. You are in an Ironman. Oh my God, will I survive the next 13 hours? You don't have to survive 13 hours. Look at the next curve. Can you do the next curve? And then the marathon part and the end, you don't have to do 40 kilometers or 42 kilometers. Can you do one more kilometer? Yeah, you can do it. Come on, one more kilometer. Oh, I need water. Can you get it to the next water station? You can do it to the next water station. And then the monthly habit. What is happening around us? And how will we change the way we invest? In what will we invest time and budget into? So those three things, daily habit, weekly habit, and monthly habit, they're always in your control. They reduce stress. They help you embrace what is instead of overthinking what could be next. Because it's not in your control. So you focus on what is in your control with the time and the resources that you have, with the people that you have right now, and with the decisions that you can take right now. That's the strategy sprints method. And you are right. It is a resilient and it is an evergreen set of principles, because the more stress you put on it, it's still working. And it still keeps you grounded and calm and in a position where you can take good decisions.
Being more mindful. Simon Severino, fantastic discussion. A lot of insights shared. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Strategysprints.com. And then you click anything, you land on our calendar, and we can continue the conversation.
Simon Severino, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.